Hello and welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas. Coming up later, Sid Lowe joining us to discuss Quique Setién getting sacked at Barcelona and whether or not he thinks Lionel Messi could leave the club. Also, Frank Leboeuf and Yanar Fjortov joins us to look ahead to PSG against Leipzig. We start, though, in the Europa League. Inter Milan with a 5-0 win over Shakhtar Donetsk to book a place in this year's final against Sevilla. Craig Burley, Ali Moreno and Shaka Hislop here to discuss it. Craig, Inter just running away with this game in the end in the second half.
Yeah, it was a great result. Not necessarily a great performance. Didn't have to be. In fact, Halle had to get out of second gear. It was a semi-final, wasn't it, Dan? One shot on target from Shakhtar Donetsk, who were an utter embarrassment to even be in the semi-finals with a performance like that. Look, 5-0 looked like it was a walk in the park in the end where it was, but let me tell you, for those people that watched it, for 64 minutes, it was a giant bore fest. But that's kind of Inter for you, and then they wear teams down, and the physicality gets the better of them. But, you know, the Lukaku goal, I think it was the fourth or the fifth, where, you know, he just walks past a couple of defenders was quite frankly embarrassing.
Yeah, I think on the hour mark, if you said this was going to be 5-0, I don't think many would take that bet, Ali. But as Craig said, Shakhtar just completely capitulated and Inter took advantage.
And just before the second goal for Inter, Junior Moraes has the best and only real opportunity that Shakhtar Donetsk had throughout the course of the game. And I think indeed you see the difference between the two teams. Whereas for Inter, you have Lautaro Martinez and Romelu Lukaku finishing the chances the way that they did. For Shakhtar, well, it's Junior Moraes, and he's all by himself, top of the six-yard box. It's a good service from the left-hand side, free header, unable to score that goal. Maybe that changes things for Shakhtar, but then after that, it felt like 30 seconds later, Inter was scoring the second goal, and from then on, it was all about Inter. And to me, it's just the difference in quality that you have between the two teams. Whereas Shakhtar was knocking the ball around in the first half, there was a sequence of play right around the 44th minute where they seemed to pass the ball 20 times around the box of Inter, but they never looked like they were going to score. And whereas Inter, you look at them, whenever Lautaro Martinez and Romelu Lukaku got together, in particular in the second half, they were always dangerous. Martinez with a couple of goals and a great assist to Lukaku's first goal. And then the turn of pace and speed and power of Romelu Lukaku was simply too much for Shakhtar. I think Chocolava, the center defender for Shakhtar, still chasing Romelu Lukaku and has not caught him just yet.
Yeah, we talk about a lot about Lukaku, don't we, on this show. Some in particular, Stevie, for example, quite critical of him. Shaka, but wherever he goes, he gets goals.
He does, and this season in particular, he showed that. And I thought you saw the best of Lukaku in the game today, albeit against the Shakhtar Donetsk defense that didn't seem to know what they were doing, didn't seem to have a game plan about how to cope with either Lukaku or Lautaro Martinez, in all honesty. But he took his goals very well. Had a chance on his left that Piatov saved well just before Lautaro Martinez made it, well, I think it was 3-0. And then finished well from Martinez's assist for the fourth, and the fifth was all about Lukaku and what has become typical of him, and we've known of him for so many years. Strong, quick on the turn, able to shrug aside the defender's attentions, and then find the bottom corner. And that was him at his best in a season where I think he's really come to life.
This move to Inter has worked out for him, Craig.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, he had to get away from Man United. He wanted away, and I think they wanted rid of him. That was clear. And, you know, I think moving to Italian football has suited him for whatever reasons. I'm not 100% sure. But he's fitted in well, 30-plus goals, as you say. Let's see if he can rally that kind of number next year again, because they're going to need it. People will be getting carried away about this result. They're probably going to win this tournament, although, you know, Sevilla has something to say about that. There'll certainly be a stronger test than this Shakhtar side. But clearly Inter the favourites, Dan. But at the end of the day, they're looking to topple Juventus and the domestic competition in Serie A. And that's a big deal. So it's going to take more signings like what they did last year when they went out and got some really good players who have done the business for them. It's going to depend on whether Conte gets what he wants. If Conte doesn't get what he wants, he's got a tendency to try and burn the house down. We know a few managers like that. So it's going to be a battle of finances and wits, but you can't doubt Lukaku. I mean, he's made the move. He scored the goals. He's done his bit. I mean, I think Lautaro Martinez was around 20 goals or that. So if they are a partnership next year, although that is decent, he's maybe going to have to step up. He's played well, but I think he'll have to get his numbers up if they are going to topple Juve next season.
Let's look ahead to the final then, obviously, against Sevilla after their win against Manchester United. Ali, who have you got?
Well, the favourite have to be Inter. And you look at Sevilla and what they did against Manchester United, and they were opportunistic. They took advantage of the chances that they had in front of them. They got a great performance out of their goalkeeper. And everything just seemed to kind of play into their hands. And then the mistakes by Lindelof not picking up and all the things that we've already spoken about in this show. But Sevilla, when we consider them to be sort of the darlings of this competition, it was a much better team back then in those years under Unai Emery than what it is now. It's a team that is going to need help from Inter if they're going to have an opportunity to win this. Inter, on paper, they are far the more talented team and far the superior team. And in terms of the attacking talent, there is no question that when you're talking about Inter, they're much better than whatever it is that Sevilla has to offer. For me, Inter is the favorite running away, and it really is about them. If they approach this in the correct manner and you have your players, your high-level, your high-profile player performing at a high level, then there's no question in my mind that Inter not only should be the favorite, but should be winning this handily.
Shaq?
Yeah, I agree with Ali fully. Listen, Inter the favorites, and with good reason, especially when you saw that game against Shakhtar Donetsk. But Sevilla, as Craig pointed out, would be a faster in a test. Yes, they rode their luck a little bit to start the second half against Manchester United. Remember, they also survived a penalty scare against Wolves in the previous round. But over the 90 minutes, I thought they were certainly the better of the two on that occasion and finished stronger against Manchester United. There'll be no pushovers, but given what we've seen from Inter, given who they continue to show who they are, they know what they're doing and they do it very well. The finishing of Lautaro and Lukaku, yeah, I feel it's Inter's. It's not going to be five, of course. Don't think Sevilla have enough to deny them.
Any hope for Sevilla?
Is this not about the time you say this is not going to be a very good final or match? Because I think you're right this time. And I'm putting words in your mouth because you haven't said it yet, but I'm giving you the opportunity to say, are you going to say this? Because let's be frank, watching these two teams, and I didn't see the Man United Sevilla game because it was my day off yesterday and I intended to enjoy my day off. But these two teams are bordering on a giant boar fest. I mean, Inter Milan are a pumped up Atletico Madrid, aren't they? I mean, let's be quite frank. Now, it doesn't matter how, and I don't have anything against how you get the job done. I'm not a believer in you have to play football a certain way. But like most people, I like to enjoy my football. And if I'm being honest, I don't enjoy watching Inter play very often. That doesn't mean he's not doing a good job there, Conte. They're super organised. They've got good players. They score goals when needed. But they're not very pleasing on the eye. And that's the one thing I've got. It's a bit like Atletico Madrid. We talk about them and have talked about them relentlessly. They're just horrible to watch. You saw them in the game against Leipzig. They were horrible. And kind of that's how Inter are for me. They may be successful this season with a win in the Europa League. They finish second in Serie A. They may or may not go all the way next year in Serie A and topple Juventus. But they're horrible to watch. And that's the be-all and end-all.
Very much then. Looking forward to the final on Friday. Meanwhile, change to the semi-finals of the Champions League. PSG taking on Leipzig. We'll be talking about that, of course, on the next edition of the show. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. As promised then, Sid Lowe is with us. Sid, not much to talk about, really, when it comes to Barcelona, is there? Let's try and scrape the barrel, shall we? Just what an extraordinary... Every day there seems to be a new story breaking, but the big one, I think the one that people are most interested in, is the future of Lionel Messi. Reports suggesting that he basically said, the board goes or I go.
Yeah, I mean, obviously this starts with the report from Marcel Bleicher, who was the guy who broke the story of Neymar going to Paris Saint-Germain, saying that Messi wants to go and wants to go now. I must confess, when that story broke, it felt to me like more likely to be a means of pressuring Bartomeu, that he's not going to allow Bartomeu to be the president who renews his contract. He's not going to give him the satisfaction of that, and he was going to try and push him, or at least try and encourage him into calling elections, because, of course, what Messi wants is to have a good team playing around him, to have a team that can win things, and to not go through this kind of thing again. Now, obviously, there are all sorts of broader questions about Messi's own culpability in this, and I think it's right that those questions are addressed, it's right that they're talked about, but when you take this in basic terms, when fans see, hang on, Leo Messi can't go, then of course the natural reaction is to panic and to be terrified at that prospect.
Lionel Messi's 33 years of age. If Bartomeu could go tomorrow, there's still a massive rebuilding job to be done. And we saw that so clearly, that Barcelona team and that defeat against Bayern Munich. Is there any temptation from his part, even though if he gets everything his way and Bartomeu goes, that he might think, crikey, if I'm going to win a Champions League, I can't do it here?
Of course. And to be honest with you, I think you could almost reframe that question. Not that I'm telling you how to ask your questions, Dan. But you could almost reframe that question and say, how could Messi possibly not have that thought cross his mind? Now, that's not to say he wants to go. That's not to say he thinks, right, that's it, I'm leaving. But how can you be the player that has gone from being 27 to being 33, in other words, the peak years of your career, without winning the Champions League? How can you be a player who watches your team get weaker each year, who sees your team, whether you're guilty or not, whether you're part of the problem or not, which of course any player has to be considered part of the problem, seeing them concede 4 in Turin, 3 in Rome, 4 at Anfield, 4 in Paris, 8 now in Lisbon against Bayern Munich, how can you not contemplate that and think, you know what, I'm going to have to go, you know what, I've got to be somewhere else, not least because he's 33, and Messi said himself, when he won the Ballon d'Or, whenever it was, back in February, I think it was, when he said himself, I'm getting close to the end. He knows this now. He knows there isn't time to wait for Barcelona to get things right if he's not convinced by what they do during this window.
But what conceivably can they do during this window?
I'm glad you asked that question, because I think this is one of the problems, is that what happens, of course, after a crisis like this, after a result like this, is everyone says, right, change everything. Buy a load of players, get rid of a load of players. Well, okay, go on then. Because it's not that easy to do. Barcelona have no money, right? And bear in mind that Barcelona, I mean, you know, to put this in its context, Barcelona panicked when Neymar left. They used all the money from Neymar departing and more. 222 million euros they got for Neymar going. They spent well over 350 million euros on Griezmann, Coutinho and Dembélé, all of whom can be seen directly or indirectly, in the case of Coutinho and Dembélé, absolutely directly, as replacements for Neymar, and it didn't work. It got to the point where they were so desperate to replace Neymar that what did they do? They went, ah, let's find Neymar back again, because we've realised that no one can replace him. But then when it came to that point, they said, oh, actually, we haven't got any more money left to bring him back. So they couldn't do this anyway. Now they're going into this summer after the COVID-19 crisis, which has had a huge impact on every club in Spain, but in particular on Barcelona. They're going into it at a time when they're not a particularly attractive club for players to go to, or at least not as attractive as they once were. And they go into it with no money. So how do you make money? Well, OK, you sell players. But this is the other part of this. So you have a big crisis and everyone says, well, sell them all then. Sell Suarez and sell Busquets and sell Alba and sell Rakitic and sell Arturo Vidal. That will generate lots of money. Will it? Will that generate money in this market? Will he be able to find a place for these players to go to when they're earning the kind of money they're earning? You know, in Suarez's case, 15 million euros. In Alba's case, I think it's 7 million euros. In the case of Busquets, it's, I think, 9.5 million euros. There's a lot of money being paid to these players. So you want to get them off your books in terms of salary, but you're not necessarily going to find clubs who want to buy them. A great example of this is Coutinho, who last year went to Bayern Munich on loan because they couldn't find someone to buy him. They couldn't find someone to help them recover the 160 million euros that it cost them, 120 plus 40 in extra add-ons. And so they sent him out on loan. They want to try and get rid of him again this summer, but again, they might not be able to. So that what might happen with Coutinho, they might keep him, which I suppose is not a bad thing, as he's the only person in Lisbon who came out of it with any credit whatsoever.
Let's throw it back to Messi then, shall we? You've painted a pretty grim picture there, Sid. What is he seeing that is going to persuade him to stay?
Look, this is really just looking at the situation and kind of giving an interpretation and trying to put myself in Messi's shoes and feel empathy with him and believe, or at least trying to think about the kind of things that might be going through his mind. He's been very cautious about what he says. He's actually spoken out a lot this season. And bear in mind, of course, that he said back in February, I think it was, we cannot win the Champions League. The way this team is, we cannot win the Champions League. So he knew that. So I look at it and I must admit, I think, well, maybe some belief that a new manager will bring a different culture to the club. Maybe some signings, maybe some players moved out that probably, frankly, need to be moved out. Maybe some shift there. But I think, actually, I must admit, I think the fundamental thing is more basic than that. And in footballing terms, not a huge amount of use. What is it that's going to keep Messi at Barcelona? I suspect it's the fact that he's 33, that it's been the club that he's been at for his entire career, that his family has settled in Barcelona. And I wonder if he just looks at this and thinks, if I go, does it damage that? Does it somehow damage the sense of legacy, the sense of importance, the sense of everything? Because Messi has a huge amount emotionally invested in Barcelona. Does he want to win? Absolutely he does. Would he love to win with Barcelona more than with anyone else? And so I just wonder if there's a bit of him that thinks that when it comes to it, that you can call it a lack of nerve if you like. You can call it a lack of ambition if you like. Although I think ever suggesting that Messi has no ambition is really, really risky, because I think he's demonstrated throughout his career that he does have. But I just wonder if he will get to that point and think, actually, you know what? It's not worth it. I've built so much here that I just don't want to turn my back on this, because for better or worse, and right now it's for worse, this is still Leo Messi's club.
Say Barcelona call his bluff. Where would he go?
Well, in a way, this is similar to what we're saying about the other players. Messi is on 39 million euros a year, or around about that. I think it's 37, 39 million euros a year. If Barcelona say, OK, he's 33, he's the one person that we can see that maybe generates us money to be able to rebuild. But a 33-year-old, even if it is the, you know, arguably the greatest player of all time, how many clubs pay for him? And how much do they pay for him? And how much do they pay for him in transfer fee, given that they're going to have to pay an enormous amount to him in salary? And so I must admit, I look at Messi, and however brilliant I think he is, and as I say, I think he's the best player in the world still, even now, even after a really disappointing season, I'm not sure how many buyers there are out there. I'm not sure how many clubs there are out there that would do this. Yes, there's a vanity element to it. Yes, there's an excitement element to it. Yes, there's that belief that maybe with him we can take that step up. But I just don't know if in this kind of market it makes sense for anyone.
The least surprising news of the day, Quique Setién sacked. Ronald Koeman heavily linked to that vacant job. Sid, is that what you're hearing as well?
Yeah, so what happened, or what has happened over the last few days, and by the way, I never trust anything that comes out of Barcelona until we actually see it done. What happened was that José María Bartomeu, the president, and his sporting director in the shape of Ramon Planes and Eric Abidal, were keen on the idea of Mauricio Pochettino, who of course had distanced himself from previous comments about Barcelona. But there are members of the board saying, look, we can't do this. You know, the relationship with the fans is already so strained that we don't want to do anything that risks putting their backs up, anything that risks creating more tension. And of course, he famously had said, Mauricio Pochettino, even though he's tried to disown these comments since, he famously said he'd rather work on a farm than work for Barcelona, and that was seen as too risky. I must admit, I suspect that Pochettino would have been looking at this and thinking, actually, is this really the right club at the right time for me, given that I might only be there for a year because there'll be presidential elections in a year's time? Is this really where I want to go? So the next target has become Ronald Koeman, who of course turned them down in January because he wanted to take the Netherlands national team into the European Championships. He will now have to forfeit that if he takes this job. And with the risk, as I just said, was the case with Pochettino as well, there will be presidential elections next summer. So how long does Koeman last, even if he does a fantastic job, and who knows what kind of job he'll do, who knows what kind of tools he'll have at his disposal to do it, even if he does a fantastic job, he's almost certainly going to be out in a year's time anyway. And I just wonder if he'll be thinking, actually, this isn't great timing. But of course, we know that it's his ambition to be at Barcelona. We know that he might well be thinking, actually, this is the only chance. And so that is what Barcelona believe will happen until it's at absolutely confirmed. I must admit, I kind of feel like backing off slightly, because we've seen before that what Barcelona believe will happen isn't always what actually does happen.
I remember when Setien was appointed, a lot of us were scratching our heads thinking, well, why have they brought him in? And then a lot of people who follow La Liga closely were saying, no, this is great. This is the sort of guy they need. They can bring it back to the Barcelona way. You know, his DNA of playing is similar to that of during their peak period. What went wrong?
Well, look, what went wrong, I mean, first of all, bear in mind that Setien comes in basically because three or four other men have said no. So Xavi Hernández has said no, who was first choice, Thierry Henry, Ronald Koeman they'd spoken to, Roberto Martinez they'd spoken to, Pochettino they'd spoken to. This is not necessarily to say that they'd offered all these guys a job, but they'd spoken to all of them. So he comes in as a third, fourth, maybe even fifth choice, and I think obviously that damages his authority up to a point. He comes in because of that idea. You know, this is the guy that will bring Cruyffism back. This is the guy that will, and I think from the board's point of view, probably seen in a cynical sense rather than a romantic sense. In other words, you know, if we have this guy, this will calm people down. This will save them. We're going in that direction that you want us to go in. These are people who maybe are naturally inclined against us, but this is a way of saying to them, you know, we're with you as well. Don't, you know, your backs on us yet, because we're going in that direction. But of course, there's a difference between what a manager wants to do, what a manager has done at other clubs, and what a manager is then able to do. And at a club like Barcelona, where there's a huge amount of power and splits within the dressing room, where there are physical difficulties within the squad, unable to do some of the pressing that he wants to do, unable to play with three at the back, which is what he wanted to do to start with. And to express it from the perspective of the coaching staff at Barcelona under Setién, they came in and did what they could do, or more to the point, they came in and did what they were permitted to do, what they were allowed to do by the circumstances. Now that, I think we have to be careful not to completely, you know, wash them clean and say it wasn't their fault at all, because clearly it was their fault. They came into a different environment to the one they were used to. They didn't have the charisma, maybe the authority, the presence to be able to force those ideas through. But fundamentally,
did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Is only really putting a plaster cast on a bloke on a broken leg. It doesn't fix what's going on underneath. It doesn't fix the mechanical problems that are there. And I think Setien is inevitably the first victim of this, but he's not the only man guilty of it.
Sid Lowe, as always, thank you very much. For a lot more on the chaos in Catalonia at the moment, be sure to download the latest edition of the Gav and Jules podcast. Tuesday sees then the first of the Champions League semi-finals, PSG taking on Leipzig. Here to discuss it, Yanar Fjortoff with us, as is Frank Leboeuf. Frank, last week, Jules, in all the hysteria and the excitement of the moment of his very blessed PSG getting through to the semi-finals, said, look, whatever happens now, it doesn't matter because we've done it. We've made it to the Final Four for the first time since 1996. Surely they're not playing with a free pass, are they, in this game, Frank? They've got to be expected to win it, or else questions will be asked once again of them.
Definitely, Dan. I think the pressure is on them, and they have to prove that all the money that they spend, all the talented players that they have in the squad, can do the job and show to the world that they deserve to be in the final. But it's going to be everything's but easy against German team Leipzig, who showed also lots of talented. On top of it, you have many many players injured. So we have still some questions mark about, Navas, I think he's pretty sure he's not going to be available, and that's a big problem for Paris Saint-Germain. But question marks about Thiago Silva, Gay, well, Ghana, Verratti, and one or two others. So let's see what's going to happen. Let's see with the tactic of Tuchel. Let's see if Icardi is going to start or Di Maria is going to come in. Many question marks, and I'm not sure they've completely sure that they're going to go to the final.
Oh, come on, Frank. Despite all of that, surely there's enough quality in that team, i.e. Neymar and Mbappe, to be enough.
Of course. In terms of talents of individuals, of course, Paris Saint-Germain is the favorite. Now, football, has been showed lately, is the game that you play at 11 and you fight all together. And Lyon showed it, Leipzig showed it just before in the quarterfinal. And that's the moral of football. And I'm so pleased to see that football is still a collective sport and it's not all about one person to another one and another one. The problem with Paris Saint-Germain is the fact that if Verratti doesn't play, the battle in the midfield, the way that Leipzig press at the opponent, he will be the only one who can sort out the problem. And if he doesn't play, I think with Herrera, Marquinhos, maybe Ghana or Paredes, it's going to be a big trouble for Paris Saint-Germain. On top of it, you have three guys at front, and I think it's going to be Di Maria, Neymar and Mbappe. Who doesn't want to defend, who's not going to defend. So it's going to be a real problem for Paris Saint-Germain, knowing that they don't have the best defense in the world. So, of course, Mbappé, Neymar, or even Di Maria can do something special, but they would have to do many, many things special in order for them to go to the final.
Leipzig, meanwhile, playing with house money, aren't they, Jan?
Well, Leipzig is a great team, and I think Frank touched on it. It's all about the stars on PSG. Of course, they will be the favorite with the names they have in their team. But what you will see by RB Leipzig with Nagelsmann, the Mozart of football, meeting his old friend Tuchel, and they met in Augsburg back in the days, and he motivated him to start coaching. So that is a great story in it all. And the thing is with Nagelsmann, he's so down to details. Of course, Tuchel is the same, but Tuchel, it's harder to get Mbappé or a Neymar and all the strikers to do all these details. And the small things in their team, a midfield, that if you did a quiz around the football world, people couldn't name the players who played in midfield for Leipzig, as Sabitzer, who's always so good at taking that ball, just getting straight into Olma, using his first touch to progress from midfield up, attacking, coming with six or seven players attacking. So, yes, there's going to be a collective of Leipzig against the star ensemble of Paris. And I see this as an open game. And of course, with that Neymar, thank God we saw that Neymar. It was good to see the football player again. And Mbappé with one leg coming on doing that stuff. Of course, there would be small favourites. But for me, this is an open game.
Frank, do France want PSG to win?
If the French fans overall want PSG to win, yes, I think yeah, we're all behind a team, and like we're going to be behind Lyon the day after, and maybe we can leave something completely historical with two French team in the final. But we're far away from there because first they will have to play the semi-final, and as Jan said, it's an open game for Paris Saint-Germain, and it's going to be difficult game for Lyon against Bayern Munich. But after maybe some people in Lyon and maybe some people in Marseille don't want to see Paris Saint-Germain winning, but overall, yeah, everybody is behind Paris Saint-Germain. It would be a nice history event to see Paris Saint-Germain going to the final and maybe win the Champions League, even if, for me, Bayern Munich is the favorite and I don't see them missing that silverware again.
Yeah, what about in Germany? Because there is some controversies and in the fact that Leipzig have come up through the ranks so quickly because of their financial backing. Has that put them somewhat as a pantomime baddie almost going into this game, or are Germany all supporting them?
No, that is a very good point, Dan, because I think you have to see it at two different levels with, you know, the Red Bull concern is behind RB Leipzig. They've just been in the Bundesliga since 2016. They call themselves Red RB, Rasenball, which means a grass ball. That's just a made-up name to get the Red Bull initials into there. But I think that sometimes when you discuss RB Leipzig, you have to see two ways into their club. Yes, this is maybe a kind of plastic kind of building up a club and breaking some sort of the 51 rule that is in Germany. That means that investor can take control. But if you see the team, how they are, or Red Bull, how they are using their philosophy to have young players in there, to have a system and coaches that kind of mirror that way of thinking, is very impressive what they've done in Leipzig. It's very impressive how they've done it in Salzburg. And that's why they attract the best players. And like I said before, there is not big, big stars in that team. They even lost Timo Werner. Now he's not even there. And still they managed to get to the semi-final. So, yes, there are, I think, unbelievable enough, there is more people who want Bayern Munich to win the Champions League than RB Leipzig. But the story with Nagelsmann and kind of unknown players is, of course, helping their image even in football mad Germany.
You know, these matches are breaking all ratings. All eyes are on these games, Jan. And as a result of that, when one player puts in a good performance, as Upamecano did, obviously, against Atletico Madrid, all of a sudden, so much speculation about his future linked to Real Madrid just this morning. How good is he and how close would he be to a move?
Well, I think also you have to see how the market is now, because there are so many clubs like Manchester City, Manchester United, Chelsea is buying all the player going forward, the attacking players of Germany. They need centre-half. Real Madrid, as you said, Barcelona, they need everything. So when one performance like that, he was, for me, man of the match in the quarterfinals. But he's been had a lot of injuries, and sometimes he's a bit overconfident. But the way he played in the quarterfinals, of course, he will attract interest all around the world. Still, I will see him first against PSG to see that he could be value 60, 70, 80 in a mad transfer window anyway. One of the centre half that will attract all the interest now in a football, or football clubs all over the world looking for centre-halves.
He's got, though, a very different task, isn't he, trying to stop Mbappe and Neymar in that match on Tuesday. PSG, obviously, favourites. Let's get some predictions, shall we, boys, just to wrap things up. Frank?
Well, that's going to be difficult. I would say 3-2 for Paris Saint-Germain.
Really? Open, exciting game, Frank.
Yes, it's what we want in Champions League. It's what we had last year.
Yeah.
And it's what we expect. We had four unbelievable quarterfinals.
Yes.
So I don't expect less from those teams. And it's going to be an open game, I said, Jan. And it's not going to be that easy for Paris Saint-Germain. Of course not. You talked about Upamecano, but about Sabitzer and so many others that we can name that they've done the job almost. I mean, we talked about, we talked about RB Leipzig and the people. I already see that that club with Salzburg going forward and going up very quickly. But how clever they are, you know, recruiting players like Upamecano. But I have a very clear example. The guy who scored the first goal, Olmo, was playing for Dinamo Zagreb last year, who was bought, I don't know, like peanuts in our modern time, and makes a difference. They had such a good game. So they're very clever. They're a very good team. They work together. They play together. They have the same thought. They have the same goals. They have a fantastic young coach. That's going to be a big, big game for Paris Saint-Germain.
So Frank going for PSG to win by 3-2. Jan?
Well, I think I agree with Frank. I think there's going to be a lot of goals, because it shows that RB Leipzig, the games they're involved in, the opponents score, they score. And the PSG with those kind of players, they will score goals as well. I mean, the only danger is that you have two coaches that can maybe kind of equalize themselves, because they know each other so well. They're very humble of knowledge. They will know everything about the strategy of them. But I think with the players you're in there, and I think that is a good for us neutrals to go into a game like that. You have so many potential match winners, very well-known match winners for PSG, and Leipzig more the players who can, Sabitzer who came from Austria. I mean, a captain that you would love to have in your team. We haven't even started about Olmo and Kevin Campbell, who kind of give them this speed going forward. So I think we are up for a very entertaining semi-final I think that PSG, I'm very, very impressed of how they manage after 4 months, more or less with one game, how they kind of, at the end, it looked like Atalanta looked like a boxer in the 12th round. You just felt that PSG would win that game. So I still think PSG, but watch out all your bookmakers. That could be a surprise from RB Leipzig.
I think we just about got there in the end. PSG to win, yes, yeah?
Yes.
Thank you very much, guys. Just a reminder, Frank and Yang with me on Extra Time as well to answer some of your tweets. Sid Lowe will also be there.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Well, that's it. That brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you very much to everyone who has been on. Stay tuned, though, for Extra Time when Jan tells one of the best stories you will hear. And I think we've got the picture as well to prove it. Stay with us. Welcome into Extra Time. Thank you very much, as always, for your tweets. Frank, Jan and Sid with us. We had a lot of tweets about Lionel Messi and his future. I think we covered that in the segment with Sid earlier. So we've kind of stayed away from most of them. But for Sid, can you see Barcelona being the next AC Milan, Arsenal or Manchester United, a sleeping giant?
Well, genuinely, this is something that's been talked about a bit in Spain over the last couple of days because, you know, it's easy enough to talk about changing things, talk about restarting, to talk about a complete restructuring of the club, but they don't really have the materials to do that at the moment. They need to generate money. They have players that it's very difficult to generate money from. They need to get their signings right, and of course, that's difficult in this market. It's difficult in a market in which there are other clubs with more financial muscle, more power, and who right now actually look more attractive as well to potential signings. And so it is plausible, I think, to see Barcelona as a club whose crisis, not necessarily the crisis gets worse, but maybe there's a normalization of this process. Now, obviously, given the nature of the Spanish league, you would think that they would be one of the best two or maybe three teams each season, depending on what happens with Atletico Madrid. But yeah, I do think it's a genuine concern that the possibility of fixing this is not quite as clear-cut as on the face of it may appear.
Frank, do Leon stand a chance against the mighty Bayern?
Well, right now, with all I've seen with Bayern Munich and what they're capable of, I think there is no team who can cope with Bayern Munich so far. I mean, what they've done during the Bundesliga since Flick took over, I think they won 27 games out of 28. So nobody can cope with them. Even Paris Saint-Germain cannot cope with them. We saw Barcelona not being able to even slightly cope with them. So of course not. No, nobody can cope with them. They are the max. And they seem to be very tuned in and concentrated about getting a new silverware. So it's going to be very, very hard for Lyon, but also for the other team in final.
Yeah, and are we giving the German and French sides too much credit for making the Champions League semi-finals? Could it be that they are simply more fresher and have less injury worries than the Italian, English and Spanish sides since the domestic seasons of the latter three ended much later?
Well, if PSG lost, we would have said that was because they didn't have the match practices. I think that we should give them great compliments. They did great quarterfinals, and this season will be strange anyway. But having said that, in the last Champions League final, we had Tottenham there. That was a surprise in a normal season. So I think that I think it's great. It's specific to see that we have three German coaches that are quite similar in a way they go into games. That shows something that maybe is more a philosophy. We have Klopp in Liverpool, this attacking the ball, attacking the opponents all over the pitch. So I think that is more a compliment to the way these guys are thinking more than is down to leagues. I think a Corona season would make it a bit strange anyway. So I think we should give compliments to the French and the Germans for being in the finals. Football is always fair somehow. Sport is always fair. You can't say that the best team didn't win. The best team will always win.
Frank, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree with Jan. I think it's hard to explain everything in football because in fact, to win games, you have to sort out so many, many details in your preparation, healthy-wise, you know, what you eat, what you drink, how you sleep, try to sort out the problem with human beings. So it's hard to know exactly where you stand. So yeah, having more rest, but having less game is maybe better. But as Jan said, Paris Saint-Germain had only two official games where some others are more, and you could have said, you know, that they found the reason where Paris Saint-Germain will have to look for that reason. So there is no only one truth. There are maybe other or different solutions and different aspect of the type of the people to win games. So you can't say it's only because of that they are in the semi-final.
Spain, how is Spain coping with the fact that they haven't got a Champions League semi-finalist that I read for the first time since 2006?
Yeah, quite badly is the answer to that. And I think we saw that in the reaction to Sevilla getting through against Manchester United. It wasn't just celebration of what Sevilla had done, the fact that they reached another Europa League final, which of course would be their sixth. It was the sense that, okay, here's some sign that we're still doing some things right. Here's some sign that this isn't just a complete collapse of the Spanish league, but there have been discussions about different styles, about whether Spanish football has kept up with the pressing game, whether tiki-taka now needs to be given a twist at very least, or maybe even completely forgotten about. And so that there are some concerns. And of course, those concerns are amplified by the fact that we're coming off the back of a very strange season that will have enormous impact on the clubs financially, that we're going to see probably a market in which Spanish clubs don't sign in particularly great numbers, certainly don't sign the very best players around. And so yeah, there's a genuine sense of concern. I mean, look, this happened last year. And it happened last year, of course, when it was seen as being the threat of the Premier League because of Liverpool and Spurs reaching the final, because just that sense that the money was finally catching up with the game. And I think actually the Spanish are a little concerned now that it's not just Paris Saint-Germain, Juventus, and the English clubs, but that maybe there's something moving in France and something moving in Germany as well.
Sid, how much more can Atletico Madrid stay with Diego Simeone, considering they are almost stagnant for the past 2 to 3 seasons? Would they be tempted to go for someone like Pochettino, who has the experience to work in a limited budget?
Well, look, if we're saying, are they going to be tempted, then of course we have to look at it in terms of the hierarchy at the club. The hierarchy at the club have been very, very clear in defending Simeone. Remember that he's the best played football manager in the world because there's a real sense of gratitude to what he's done. In part, he's a victim of his own success in that he's created expectations that 10 years ago against Atletico Madrid were absolutely impossible. And so he's now being measured against something which is different to what he came in at, which tells you how far he's taken them. The club have defended him, they've backed him, they've talked about, you know, that it's unfair that anyone should question him. But that debate is now out there. And there is now that question mark about that says, you know, Simeone did something extraordinary, but to do something else, does he need more? And bear in mind as well, Dan, this is a recurring debate. We've spent the last 3 years, Atletico buying slightly different types of footballers. And we've talked about, will they evolve into something a bit more expansive? Will they become a little bit more creative? And then every year they kind of come back again. And this year, I think that's caught little bit. The headline on the front of Marca after they were knocked out of the Champions League was very telling. That the headline was, you know, being stingy or being miserly, being if you like, kind of dull in the way that you play, ends up being something that you have to pay for. That's why they got knocked out. And so that criticism, I think, was much more direct than what we've seen before. But Atletico as a club, at least, are still defending Simeone.
How much does he get a year, Sid?
Oh, you've caught me on the hop there. I think it's something like 11 or 12 million euros a year after tax, I think. But please don't quote me on that because
I'm putting
that finger out.
Sid Lowe says definitely.
Yeah, you've done it.
It's done. It's already out there.
It's something like that.
Wow. Goodness me. Frank couldn't get out of bed for that. Frank, do you think you can leverage your acting skills into a role as an acting coach of Premier League sides? I feel like they're not great at selling the referee on fouls, and if we have throwing coaches, why not acting coaches?
Well, I don't know what to answer to that question. I mean, they sometimes, you know, play some good roles and pretending that pretending pretty well, you know, the sadness that they showed or something like that. But I don't see coaches. You know, I don't see anybody being possibly a good actor or doing great alongside Simeone. I love Simeone. Simeone does well.
What
Simeone
they're talking about is
a real actor.
You could go into Liverpool and teach, for example, Firmino to go down and sell it better. With your acting repertoire, you could then help the players sell it to the referees.
Oh, my God. There is a country for that, and it used to be the best country in the world for acting. It's Italy. We knew how to, they knew exactly how to do well to and players to do when and we can see that again and still with some players like Bonucci, like Chiellini, you know, pretending kicking players and going on the floor and knowing exactly what to do. I think I love too much football. If some days a club asked me to teach players how to faint or how to falling on the floor and pretending to accept that mission, I mean, that's not something I'm used to. I used to do. It's not something I like to see. I was a defender. I want to remind you that. I've seen so many strikers, you know, pretending where you didn't touch them to go on the floor that I'm fed up to see that. And I'm a biggest enemy of Neymar when he does that. I can say easily that he's the most beautiful player in the world when I see him playing. When he goes on the floor pretending when nobody touched him, I hate him. I really hate him when he does that.
Okay. Has Jan or Frank, Jan, let's start with you first, had an on-field fight with their own teammates during a match?
No, I haven't had an on fight on the field, but I've had some fights in the dressing room, sometimes in training, sometimes when you played in England, there were all kind of different English football players. I remember I asked some English, did you learn in school how to break noses? Because if a Norwegian try that, we'll never succeed in that. So now the only thing I did on the field that was a bit out of order, I was kissing Tim Flowers, the Blackburn Rovers goalkeeper, in the middle of a game because I told him, if you touch me again, I will kiss you straight on the lips. And he was like laughing and yeah, he did. And so that was a good photo to have in my office.
Oh, that's brilliant, Jan. Oh, I like have to Google that. Oh, you see.
Yeah, you have to Google that. You'll find out. That's a great. And the good thing about it, that I was a photographer who did a perfect picture. And it was the front page of a gay magazine in London. I must say, I was very proud.
Oh, good for you, mate. Good for you. Frank?
It happened at the beginning of my career when I was already the captain of Laval, a small club in the League 2, and I was the penalty taker. And during the preseason, I know one of the players playing striker asked me if he could take the penalty that we just got. And I said, okay. And I said, we put it in, you know, I want to win. It was a friendly game. and he missed it. He tried to chip the ball, and I think the goalkeeper didn't even dive. He just got the ball, you know. And I got so upset that I started to tease him all game long, and I say, well, the only thing you're capable of doing is those kind of crap, and blah, 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 blah. At the end of the game, I came to him and I say, you know, after the game, I say, you know, why you did that? You didn't respect anybody, and that's not fair. And the guy came to me, and a friend of ours saw us, thought that we were about to fight, and he held me, and the guy headbutted me and,
wow.
and killed me just there. And my friend was holding me. He said, let me go. I want to defend myself. And the coach came and he put us out, and we were fined and out for, I think, a week of the team. And he became one of my biggest friends. And when he got married, I even drove him to the city hall. So, you see, stupid thing between players.
Jan, I've just Googled that picture. It is magnificent.
And it is, isn't it?
This isn't like a little peck on the cheek. It is a full-on kiss on the lips of Tim Flowers. That is marvelous. Have I never seen that before?
It was Tim Flowers. I was over in England doing a job for someone, and then it was on BBC. They have a big program of Tim Flowers ending his career, and he was asked, what was the strangest thing you ever experienced in your career? And he said, well, it was this Jan Fjørtoft of the Norwegian who kissed me straight on the lips. So that was good. I think it's good that male footballers can be good role models.
Gentlemen, thank you very much. Much appreciated to Jan, to Frank, and to Sid. Google that picture. It's awesome, Jan. I've never thought I would see that, but it is brilliant. Thank you very much. We're back tomorrow for more. Until then, goodbye.